Yeah, sure. Justin Springer, co-producer.
Edward Kitsis, writer.
Adam Horowitz, writer.
So what was the jumping off point, though, with the script? What was the first idea?
The first idea was two Jeff Bridges.
It was like, we wanted to tell, and Eddie and I first, like, were told that we had an opportunity to pitch an idea for this movie. We said, well, what would we want to see? And we were thinking about what's the way into the story and doing a father-son story. And we thought, we love Jeff Bridges so much, we want to see him twice. And that kind of led to this idea of, like, what if you had a man who's also faced with a 35-year-old version of himself, kind of frozen with all the kind of hubris and flaws of himself at that time, and then have his son kind of caught between them. What could that, lead
right.
to?
Right, and we love the idea of, Kevin Flynn being inside this system and having all this time to think, and it's like, what if I said to you, what if there was an 18-year-old version of yourself running around out there? You'd be like, oh, no. I've learned so much, and this thing hasn't. Yeah, so that's kind of where we started. That was our jumping off point.
How many times did you guys watch the original one for preparing this production?
Well, we had, admittedly seen it a number of times over the course of our lives. We were huge fans of it. It was a very, very important, informative movie for us as kids. But really, going into this, our goal was always to sort of honor that movie and to do something that came out of the DNA of it, but really to try to make something that could stand on its own as its own self-contained story that an audience could come into cold and really hopefully enjoy and appreciate. And then if they were fans of the original or did go back to it, be able to find things that really spoke to them as well.
My test is always, will my wife understand this? If the answer is no, then we have to keep digging. Right. Throw that idea out.
That's exactly right. On Lost, I used to do it when we'd do it with my father. My dad's name is Arlen, and we'd say, will my dad understand this scene? And same with this movie. We wanted to be able for everyone to enjoy it and get into it and be involved and not feel like they had to play catch up.
So what's it like to go from writing a television series like Lost to writing just a movie?
It's pretty cool. They were both, they're different in different experiences, but I love them both equally, So, for us, being fans of Tron and being asked to write Tron was kind of like, liking the Stones and being asked to join them. So for us, that was what was really cool about it, was that, this was something that inspired us as a youth, and we were, to be able to sit down and write, Kevin Flynn, and to write, he gets on a light cycle and things like that, were like, they were just awesome for us,
And I don't think we could have written Tron without our experience on Lost. I think we learned a lot about mythologies and storytelling, and most importantly, character, that really, I think, served us well. And our approach to Tron, which was coming in through story and character to be able to guide you through what could otherwise be an overwhelming world.
The ISOs are referred to as the miracle. Mm-hmm. Something's going to change. They're kind of a spontaneous, digitized life form. Could you talk a little bit more about them, their significance, and specifically Olivia Wilde's portrayal of one of them?
Well, Olivia is...
spoiler.
I can just tell you that I'm... Every time I watch her performance, I just get the chills. I just think she has done such a great job, and she's such a talented actress, and she's made us, the writers, look so good.
I think just broadly, without getting into the specifics, because it is, I think, something fun for an audience to experience, but I think there was a little bit, just where the idea came from was really just that... Tron, in 1982, it was about this digital universe that was a new frontier that people hadn't really explored yet, and so it was like the promise of that future that kind of has come true over the last 25 years. But I think when we started thinking about what are the new, kind of big ideas that we could explore in this world as the technology has continued to evolve on its own, where are we getting? We thought the idea of artificial intelligence or self-created artificial intelligence was just an interesting place to go. Just in terms of when you look at kind of how will technology continue to evolve past 2010, it's certainly something the technologists and futurists talk about. And we thought that, without being too science-based, it just felt like an interesting story element to fold into our narrative that was founded in science, or at least sort of future
and,
science.
And, I think the evolution of the programs and having them become more human-like, so to speak, was always something interesting to us. I mean, even in the original Tron, if you remember when they got out of the games, there was that, like, the patricians of the grid, that there was that scene where there was, like, four people hanging out, and I always wondered, what were they up to?
And that was really actually important for us, like, very early on in the development of it, like beyond just, like, the emotional father-son story, I was thinking about what would the grid have become, and how would it have evolved, and evolution became a really important idea to us, which is just the way technology evolves at incredible rates. What would that mean inside there?
Yeah, I mean, Justin can speak to this even more, but, like, the technology we had at the beginning of the movie was already improved by the time we finished it, right?
Yeah, I mean, just even in the movie-making process, the technology used to create the film was, you know, improving daily, and so it was interesting to see how, you know, we were making improvements to the work that we were doing because the technology was evolving so rapidly, and it was kind of a movie about just that.
Justin is the first robotic producer.
Yeah.
There is such a theme.
Joe created him 3 years ago as part of the test, and we've taken him ever since.
It's interesting that Joe would create a robot that needed glasses, but...
Justin, can you speak to that? Some of the biggest challenges that you had in working on producing Tron Legacy, some of the biggest maybe obstacles that you had.
We were difficult.
But, you know, but ultimately that you were really satisfied with after the fact.
Yeah, you know, there are many of them. I think the thing that first comes to mind for me is just the fact that, you know, knowing that the most important aspect of this is story, and our success sort of depends on an audience relating to the story of the movie and feeling compelled by the story of the film, but knowing that it's going to take a massive amount of visual effects and a massive amount of manpower, and it's going to be a difficult production process. Lit suits and all these cameras and all these stages and all these sets to try to bring it all to life, but not forgetting and not letting anyone else forget, whether it be the actors and Joe, and not that they would forget, but just helping everybody stay focused on the fact that what's going to make us successful or not is the success of our story. So I think for me that was kind of the biggest thing, like how do we really stay focused on that, but knowing that we have to spend all this time and energy to get the other stuff right. You know, I think
I can tell you this, that Justin, in my opinion, had one of the hardest jobs because, you know, Adam and I would constantly need him, and we just, like, could not understand what would take more importance than us. And every department feels that way, and there's only one of him, and there's only 24 hours of the day, and everybody needs something, and he managed to be able to kind of navigate through a world that is really, it was like running an entire organization. I mean, how many people worked on this film, you know? And I was always impressed with the way that Justin was able to go to a two-hour story meeting with us, to a presentation to, like, international distribution, to, like, go down to Joe to look at, you know, eyes. Yeah. Literally, like, things like that, to then, you know, and I gotta say, I applaud him for not
just that.
Yeah.
One of the other interesting things, though, that I think is a challenge on these types of movies is that, you know, we built a lot of sets, and we shot as much as we possibly could, but it's this new universe, and there's nowhere to go really photograph it, and so much, there's a lot of visual effects, obviously, in the film, and so you spend a lot of time trying to imagine what the world's going to look like, and you detail it out with concept artwork, and you pre-visualize the scenes, but at the end of the day, you have Jeff Bridges performing on stage, for, you know, performing the Clue side of, you know, the performing as the Clue character, but it's really just Jeff Bridges in this sort of crazy head rig, and you see actors running around on full blue screen sets in some cases, and you're just trying to imagine that we know, like, this is where we are, and we have to get it right here in this moment, but you have nothing around you to contextualize it, to tell you that you're even getting close, and that's just a tribute to Joe. I mean, it's a hard part for me just to watch, but it's a harder part for, obviously, Joe to make happen, and he has such a vision, for these things that I think when I was sitting there just looking at this blue screen stage saying, like, what is this going to become, I think he knew that it was going to look like the disc game that you guys saw last night.
Yeah, no, I always wonder what it looks like. I always wonder what it would be like to look through his eyes, you know, because it's unreal what he sees, you know, and you really see it in the movie. You see his background in architecture and all the things he's interested in, and when you're trying to write a movie that takes place in a new world, to have a director who is also an architect and who is also a visionary, like, it just makes your life easier.
Now that you guys are fans, and you guys were fans of the first movie, and now that this movie's out and it's basically the legacy from one generation to another, what do you guys feel about that, and what message do you guys give to all the newer generation about Tron?
I hope they like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the message is, you know, like, we're hoping to make a film that they'll enjoy and that they can be some sort of reflection on the times for them, the way the first one was for us, and got us excited about the possibilities of technology and film and storytelling. You know,
I remember, you know, vividly sitting in that theater and just being blown away by the concept that behind a video game, there's people. You know, that you could go behind the screen of a computer screen, and I didn't really understand at the time what a computer was. I certainly didn't have a home computer, but it just blew my mind. It inspired me, and it stayed with me forever.
I asked my parents, "Can we go get a computer?" Like, those cost $33,000.
Yeah,
it's the size of your garage.
Yeah, exactly.
Just the wonderful dialogue in there from Jeff Bridges. I'm just wondering, did he have any input into some of the stuff that he said?
Oh, of course.
He was fantastic to work with. And in working on the very stress of the script, and the more we got to know him, the more we would try to sort of key into what he did and try to write to that. And then he would bring stuff and come up with
sometimes lines. Just off, you know, he would just spit something out that was just far better than you did. And I said, "Great, I'll take credit for it later."
Like, we'd be talking in story meetings, he would say, "Oh, we're jamming now." And then we would take that and we'd be like, "Oh, this, we're writing that scene. Oh, perfect." And
that's a great part of the process when you get to know the person and you start to understand how they're evolving their character, how they're forming their character in their heads, and then obviously to be able to take that and apply it.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was great because we were up in Vancouver the week before it was shooting. I remember we were in this little windowless office, and Adam and I were, you know, kind of writing, and there's a knock on the door, and we look up, and it's Jeff. And he's like, "Oh, hey, man, do you guys mind going over a few scenes?" And we're like, "Sure."
Yeah.
And it was, like, so great because he has so many great thoughts and so many great ideas, and to get to work with these people and to get to understand what they're thinking really helps you write for them a lot better, I think, you know, than just being in a vacuum somewhere and sending it off.
What about Michael Sheen's character?
That is another case of a brilliant actor that we will take credit for.
Yeah.
For something that they complete. I mean, you know, we all looked at that role one way, and he just made it his own.
It's the dream of a writer, you know, it's to write something and have an actor come in and bring something else to it and kind of take it to another level and make you look awesome.
Really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that is right. Wouldn't you just say that is Sheen?
Yeah, it's great. He had a real vision when he came to the role, and he just brought something quite special that we just were able to kind of sit back and watch when we were on set, and we're like, "This is gonna be good."
Did you guys have any input on the viral aspect of the movie?
Three of us have been working with Susan and Alex on the viral. You know, for us, it's important. I think that, you know, we treat this very seriously, Tron, and we treat the world very seriously, and we think it's important that it's all of one story. You know, that's what's cool to me. You don't want the video game to not relate to the movie, to not relate to the show, to not relate, because that's not fun. What's fun is, you know, you see Tron last night, and you see the movie, and you're flying over sectors. And you're always, and for us as writers, we're always like, "What's going on down there?" And you know what? We don't have time in a hour and 50 minutes to tell you what's going on in that sector, but we certainly can in other areas, be it the comic book, the graphic novel, I mean, the animated show. And so the viral campaign was really a part of that as well. You know, we wanted to tell a story.
In the movie, we have only the time and the means to tell one, hopefully very focused story, but like we feel like we've built a mythology around it that we're very excited to explore in things like the ARG and the animated show.
And we can't say, you know, enough about how great the, you know, the people that did the ARG were.
When it comes to the TV animated show that's going to be debuting in about a year, will that segue directly from the end of this film? Or will it kind of operate on its own level in some ways?
We haven't really given specific... There's going to be a time and a place, I think, to make the announcement for exactly what the show is about, but it definitely ties into the existing mythology that we've all created. In fact, we, the three of us, sat down with the animated series group and talked through what are the potential stories that could be told that would relate to the film, but could definitely tether out away from legacy and tell its own stories with its own characters, so that it just kind of fleshes out the world a little bit. So I think we're quite excited about the animated series. The stuff we're working on is really, really fun. We're excited to share it with everyone soon. But it definitely does fit within the canon of the mythology created from the 1982 movie through, you know, 2010.